This shiur has been brought to you from the Sharim Audio Library. For information about Sharim or to order additional CDs, please visit our website, www.sharim.com, or email sharim@sharim.com. Thank you for making Sharim part of your continual learning experience.
Okay, now why is it important to study Derech Hashem? The reason is because in order for a person to understand what's going on in this world, they have to have, in order for them to be successful, they have to have a balance of what this world is made up of and how it works. Okay, and that's what Derech Hashem does. Derech Hashem tells you where to invest your money. He teaches you what everything is all about, what the most fundamental things are in Judaism. What does prayer mean? Why do we pray? What does Torah mean? Why is there a Gentile world? Why is there a Jewish world? How do mitzvot work? Now, we should also appreciate the fact that the Ramchal was a master Kabbalist. Ramchal was a master Kabbalist who died at age... Very good, 39, he passed away. And is buried... Rabbi Akiva. Right? He was he's buried beside, what's it called, Rabbi Akiva? And that's Kinga. Let's just speak all over your head. But now. So he's buried there. When did Rabbi Akiva do tshuva?
40.
Age 40. Interesting that the person buried next to him died at 39, and he commenced his tshuva career at age 40. So the way it goes is that the Ramchal was actually a Gilgul of Rabbi Akiva.
Wow.
And he was there to fix up those 39 years that Rabbi Akiva didn't live as a law-abiding Jew. What's it called? Okay? So that's pretty nifty. Now, the Ramchal himself, as you were saying, was a master Kabbalist. And there are books today written by the Ramchal that I personally know, like real Kabbalists, that cannot read more than a sentence or two.
Why? Of it,
because they're so deep.
Huh.
It was once the yahrzeit of the Ramchal, and it was the day of his passing. So in his memory, we had a rabbi who was a really tremendous Torah sage. Read one or two of his lines, and we couldn't make out what he was saying. It was so deep. It was so it was going into realms that are so not understandable. The two or three lines you couldn't make a sense of. And here, what did he do? He seems to write what looks like an index, you know. But inside everything, if we were to take time and just study every chapter, we would see how intertwined are Kabbalistic thoughts and Kabbalistic ideas and things that are tapping into the deepest fashions of the world. Okay, it's important to keep that in mind that we know who wrote this book. Yes. And another thing, it's a Feldheim classic. There you go. He's the only person to have two on the Feldheim classics. One is Derech Hashem, the other is? This is Sharon. It's pretty impressive. It's got to be on a checklist up there. Yeah, yeah.
So Rabbi Akiva and the Ramchal are buried next to each other?
Right next to each other.
Where is that?
In Tiberias. That's right. Okay, page 74. Okay. Chilkei klal abriya hem gashmiim v'ruchaniim. The parts of creation are divided into two: gashmiim, physical; ruchaniim, spiritual. Okay, hagashmiim hem murgashim mechushenu. Those that are physical are the ones that we can actually feel. Umitchalkim le'elyonim v'tachtonim. There are upper and lower spheres. Ha'elyonim hem kala ha'gramim ha'shemayim. Dahenu ha'galgalim v'kochavim. The upper spheres that we can feel are what's called galgalim mikochavehim. There's stars, and then there's a whole system of a space system, I guess you'd call it, like where God has set up the way things work. Meaning, we have to understand that the world as we see it is really the smallest point of creation. And I'll tell you what I mean in a moment. Okay, I'm just going to draw this. The world as we see it is only on this level. The Zohar says that this is God's throne. Then, the way it works is, there's the first world, and it continues, the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and then there's us. What that means is the following, is that by the time we get from God's throne to us, anything that has happened has gone through like a filtering system. Okay? That means, because if we were to receive the influence from God's throne, it's like plugging in your 110 into a 220. It fries. Okay? Therefore, the Almighty set up the world in such a way that there's like a filtering system where this level, this high level, and this low level, they just keep going down until we get to this point where we're able to receive the heavenly blessing. Now, in the world to come, what's going to happen is going to be us, that little dot, sitting in front of God's throne, or around God. Okay.
All the seven levels are going to be taken out, and we're only.
Yes, we're going to be just straight in front of the Almighty, and we're going to be so pure, our body's going to be so pure and heavenly, that we're going to be able to handle that spirituality. Okay. Now, what you have to appreciate is that when your prayers, when you pray, look how much your prayers have to go. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Our sages say that there was a certain king who told the people that he was God. Told people he was God. So God said, "I have an angel that it takes 500 years to walk from the bottom of his foot to his what's it called your ankle bone. 500 years if you were to walk, and then for another 1,000 years from his ankle to his knee. That's an angel that I have, and another 2,000 years of just straight walking." This massive angel, he says, and this is not one of my biggest angels. And he says to him, to this human, God says to him, like, "Can you tell me you're God?" Okay? So all of those angels and everything we're talking about, when we pray, our prayers have to go all the way up there. That's why there's such things as saying Kaddish. Well, that's why it's good to pray in a certain place. Because it protects your prayers from all kinds of forces, shall we, without sounding too Star Wars-y. But all have the forces that are hindering your prayer, because it really does have a long way to go. And when you pray, what do we say? Baruch Atah. I mean, you. We're talking to Hashem, first person, so to speak. We're like standing right up there when we say a blessing. We're in front of God, right? And when it says when we go to the bathroom, what does it say? Galui v'yadua lifnei. What does that mean? It's known before your heavenly throne that I went to the bathroom. All this is going on with this little spot on the world itself, and my actions of going to the bathroom are known to him in front of his heavenly throne. This is the reason for saying this is because the Ramchal is telling us there are certain galgalim mikochavim, right? There are certain beings atachtonim mikrama shebechalal galgal atachton dahinu haeretz hamayim maavir v'kol ma shebehem min hagufim murgashim, all these physical parts of the world. The water, the air, all these things that we can feel. Haruchanim, hem nivraim mishulanim migeshem. There are those that are spiritual that you cannot feel. Bilti mugashim mechushen. We can't feel them at all. And those are divided into two. Mechalkim mishne minim. Haechad neshamot is the soul. Hashinim nivdalim. He calls them here in English the souls and the transcendental beings. Okay, there are different beings other than our soul, and there are different beings that God created that are spiritual that we can't see with our own eyes. And in the times of our sages, not only could they see them, but our sages tell us that those beings were amongst the people. They used to go amongst the people. That's why the Gemara says, a Talmid Chacham should not walk by himself on a Wednesday night. All kinds of things like that. Because there were times that they were known to come out. And those are part of the spiritual beings world that we can't see today. And they were banished from coming to human, you know, where we live. Okay? Any questions? No? Alright, good. Let's go. What is the soul? I'm going to read this in English, okay? Because they're very lofty ideas. Okay, 75. Souls comprise a class of spiritual entities created to be put into physical bodies, to be joined and strongly bound to these bodies. The souls is a spiritual entity that is put into a physical body. What that means is your soul and body are two complete opposites. We were just talking in the previous class. Your soul is a giver and your body is a taker. You're hungry because your body's hungry. You're tired because your body's tired. Okay? And they're fused together. So much so that when you make a decision, your job is to figure out, okay, who's calling the shot? Is it the soul or the body? Who's pressing that snooze button? Is it because I really need to rest a little more, or is it because my body is taking control? Acting upon them in order to perform various functions in them at different times. Now, they're strongly bound together. Only are they strongly bound together, these two things, but they have to make decisions together. And that's where our test comes in. Making decisions when our body is so overwhelmed with this tremendous, you know, bonding that it has going on. Okay? Alright. Transcendental beings compromise a class of spiritual entities that are not created to be put into physical bodies. Okay, there are these spiritual entities that are don't have physical bodies. These in turn are also divided into two categories. The first category consists of forces and the second of angels. There's not only in angels, but there are also certain forces in this world that the Almighty has created. Alright, the next part is these transcendental beings also exist on different levels, each type having its own laws and distinct nature depending on its level and place in general scheme. Different angels have different powers because they have different responsibilities. Sometimes you have an angel responsible to heal. Sometimes you have an angel responsible to kill. Sometimes you have an angel responsible for, you know, a certain part of the world. Each one has its own force. So great is variation between different angel types that each group can be called a different species in a general class. This general class is the angelic. Okay? So we have angels, and we have humans, and the human himself is divided from soul and the body. There is, however, another class that is like an intermediate. We have the human beings that are physical, and we have the angels that are spiritual. But there's something else between the spiritual and physical. This consists of entities that cannot be detected by physical means and are not bound by the limitations and laws of ordinary detectable matter. For this reason, they might be improperly be considered spiritual. Their essence, however, is very different from that of angelic class, even though they may resemble them in some ways. These entities also have specific attributes and unique limitations. They are therefore considered a separate class, namely that of Shadim, demons. Okay? So, we have something, a creation that's in the middle. A real being, it's called a Shed, a demon, that is not an angel in the sense that it's totally spiritual, it's not a human that it's physical, but it's in between. It sort of dances at two weddings. It has a spiritual part to it, and it has a physical part to it, yeah.
We see them.
We can see them. You don't know that you see them sometimes, but you can see them.
As if they manifest in human bodies?
Absolutely.
Really?
Shlomo HaMelech has seen them. There's a story in the Gemara where a certain demon, Shed, named Ashmedai, he had... Well, the story goes like this. In the Beit HaMikdash, they would not cut any stones with metal. What do they do? They had a powder that they would put on a stone, and they would have a certain worm that would eat the powder, and then miraculously the rock would slide in half. Now, the only one who knew where those worms were was a certain demon named Ashmedai. Now, Ashmedai wasn't exactly a typical friendly type of demon, you know, like we think of like Shrek or something like that, you know, like, oh my God, he's going to sit down and protect. But he was like, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was the man, you know, he had the most wisdom. He had a certain soldier that he was able to send with the task of conquering Ashmedai. And our sages tell us that this soldier went to Ashmedai, he knew where he was, and he perceived and he followed his actions. And he saw that every day he would go out and do his regular stuff, and he would come back every day and he would drink from his well. They go down into the well and drink from the well. Now, in order to assure that nothing happened to the well, he covered it with a seal, so nobody would tamper with it. So the soldier of Shlomo HaMelech said, "I have an idea of how to capture this demon." He dug a hole underneath the well, and then drained out all the water, sealed it up, and dug another hole underneath and put in wine. So you see, it's a spiritual being that's not in its physical body, but they also have physical attributes to it. Like they eat and they drink. So he dug a hole and he put wine into the well. And so that's where they came in. And he saw the seal was there, opened, uncovered the seal, and drank all the wine and became drunk. And then the soldiers from Melech captured him. He put a task with God's name on his forehead. And by that he was caught. Whatever that means, I don't know. It's one of those you have to be there. Things. I don't really know how those things work. And he caught him and he chained him up and he brought him to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, you know, and on the way there he was laughing and crying. And the sages go into like a whole story. He was laughing. He said, "Why are you laughing? Why are you crying?" And he saw some guy sitting on a stone who was very poor. And he was laughing because the poor guy, if he would have known that he was sitting under a treasure, he would be happy. The poor guy was sitting under on a stone, or underneath it was a treasure, and he didn't know about it. And he was, you know, another time he saw a person getting killed, and he was smiling about it. It was like all these things that he saw on the way. Finally, he gets to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech has him chained up in his dungeons or whatever it is, and says, "Tell me where this worm is." And he's like, if you take off my task, I'll tell you where the worm is." So Shlomo HaMelech is a give and take. He says, "I won't do anything to you." Second, he takes off his task. The second, as he just said, like that instant, Shlomo HaMelech felt himself being banished into the woods. And then Ashvadai took the form of Shlomo HaMelech and took over the throne. That's how he took over Shlomo HaMelech's throne, and he banished him. And this is our sage of thought. Shlomo, you have to understand this. This is just a tad bit before the time of email and Facebook. So not everybody knew what Shlomo HaMelech looked like. You could see a man walking around who's dressed quite, you know, majestically, because you wouldn't know he's the king. I mean, everybody claims to be the king. People didn't recognize that he was the king. He says, I'm the king. And how do we know you're the king? And in the palace, nobody knew anything because the demon emulated Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech got close to the palace. It talks about like all these happenings and that. And it says that when he got there, they tested, they said to him, "How do we know if you're the king or he's the king?" He said, "Well, check around his bed. When he wakes up, pour like flour on the floor. And you'll see in the morning when he wakes up, you'll see forms of chicken feet." Because the demons don't have, the one difference between them is they don't have regular feet. They have like demons, like chicken feet. And they woke up and they saw that was a demon, and then they captured him, and Shlomo became king again. But the demons are, you know, today, they're not walking around. They don't be scared, and I know some of you are getting nervous. You're thinking, well, maybe some family members are demons. And I have a mother-in-law that I don't get along with. For sure she's a demon. But, you know, but the truth is that today they're banished from our midst. Our sages have banished them from our midst. They're not permitted to come into our surroundings. Right, that's what I'm saying, for that reason.
As in
the
that.
Right, and that's why I say, Torah sages shouldn't be walk by themselves. That's why our sages say, if you pay attention to the knees and the clothes of Torah sages, their clothes are tattered. They get tattered very quickly. They're like, if you're like their pants get ripped and stuff like that. It says because the demons are jealous of them and they brush against the clothes. I don't know. Michael's in perfect condition, I guess. I guess down now, the Torah. Yeah.
So the only thing in between the physical and the spiritual is the
demons. Yes.
And demons are inherently negative?
As far as I know, they're inherently... They're not negative. They're subservient to God. They can't do it, but they're not on a good side, so to speak. They're not an angel that you would pray to. You don't pray to angels, but they're not an angel that would be sent to heal. Or something like that. This I'm only reading this in English. I generally read a review, but these things are very intricate. So like the translation. This class, separate class, namely that of this class, also contains certain individual types, where each type may consider a separate species belongs to the general class of Shadim. Right? There are different levels of demons, and each one looks different, acts different, strengths, half human, you know, type of thing. Their purpose is like, you know, they fulfill certain tasks for God. Like different messengers, different things that have to be taken care of in the world are fulfilled. Let's just say theoretically, without getting too like, you know, spooky, but like if there needs to be like a head wave or something, you know, God would send like that type of angel, that type of demon to do something like that. That's what it means. That, for example, you know, every blade of grass, every tree, every fruit has an angel on top of it. Yeah, our sages say that every blade of grass has an angel standing on top of it, screaming at it to grow. So each one has a different realm. Certain nations are protected by angels and not by God Himself. All nations, in fact, except for the Jewish people. That's why when it says that when the Jews came out of Egypt, that there was a war, like a battle in a sense between the angels. The angels were complaining to God, "Why are you saving the Jews and you're punishing the Egyptians?" Who was that? That was the angel of Egypt. That he was like their UN in the heavens, you know.
Yeah.
So like he's representing them. Okay, of all the things that exist, however, only man alone consists of two absolute opposites, namely a spiritual soul and a physical body. Nothing else in all creation share this quality. Okay, so there's only one thing in the world that's complete opposite, that has complete opposite, and that is us, right? And therefore, when you have two parts of you, when you feel that you might be pulled in two different parts, That's called being human. Why are we placed like that? Why does God do that to us? Why are we composed of two complete opposites? Why are we composed of two complete opposites?
We can battle and win.
Very good. So we can battle and win. Positive thinking for you. But the reason is, like you said, in order to make the test greater. Okay? And not only are we composed of two opposites, but within our actions are two opposites. We might be trying to do a spiritual action, but in a sense it might be intertwined with many materialistic motives. You might donate money to a hospital, but then you'll want them to put your name on the wing. Is that a materialistic or a spiritual? Are you doing it for them or are you doing it for you? Make up your mind. Right? Many things are like that. And you know, so that is the specialty that humans have. That's why you find yourself in a constant state of battle. Because you're composed of two opposites. Your body wants materialism and your soul wants purity. Okay? Man is also a living creature and therefore also has a similar animal soul. Okay? We have within us an animalistic soul. Besides this animal soul, however, man also has a higher soul. The higher godly soul is a separate entity, completely different from the body and far removed from the physical. Only by virtue of God's decree is the higher soul able to reside in man's physical body for the purpose outlined in the previous chapters. We have a physical animalistic soul. Okay, all of us have to appreciate that. And that pulls us towards materialism. And then there is a spiritual part of us, which is very similar to that of God's. And the only, what does he mean when he says that it's only in our body because God decreed? Why is that so? I want you to explain this line to me. Only by virtue of God's decree is the higher soul able to reside in man's physical body for the purpose outlined in the previous chapter. Why does that mean only by God's decree? Yeah.
Because it's like almost like oil and water. It like doesn't make sense. Like it just doesn't go together at all. Like at all at all. So it has to be completely divinely.
So that's very important to keep in mind that first of all these two opposites within us are so opposite that they would never stay together. And not only that, I can let you in on a little secret. The soul is hindered by the body. The soul just says, leave me alone, let me do spiritual things, right? Sometimes you'll see people on a program or something and they'll like connect to themselves and they'll say like, I'm having a moment. Like they're connecting to themselves because that their soul is finally able to breathe. You know, in our fast-paced Western society, whether it's London, England, wherever it is, or America, whoever, Australia, wherever anybody's from, things are so fast-paced. We just step on our soul all the time. We finally step off the plane here in LA, right? After really working on our personality, you know, trying to get on the plane, then when you finally get here, this is the land of your soul. Okay. And our job is to really strengthen our soul over our body. That's why it says that when a wicked person passes away, our sages say it's compared to a person taking cotton and running it through like a comb. Like your soul's leaving the body, the soul of the evil person is leaving the body. It's like the soul is so intertwined with the body, like cotton running through over a comb. It's just like being like torn out. And a righteous person, when his soul leaves the body, it's like milk and hair. Like, you know, you stick your finger in and you just like slide it out. It doesn't feel anything. Because it's so pure. The body is so pure. It's not a deterrent anymore. Okay? And that's why it says Moshe Rabbeinu's soul didn't want to go up to the heavens. Why didn't he want to go up to the heavens? You know why? Because it's better for me down here. It's so pure. Moshe Rabbeinu's body was so pure, there was no difference for him. So his soul's like, why should I go up there? I have it down here. Yeah. Yes, you can achieve that level of worth. Yes. The majority of Jewish history has been out of Israel. So we can't. There is a specialty that being just stepping foot in Israel, lets you attain in the heavens, and those who have not stepped foot in Israel cannot attain that level. It doesn't matter if you're the Gaon Mevilna, Baal Shem Tov, Tanish Chai, whoever you are. Just the fact that you've stepped foot in Israel allows your soul to reach a certain level. There's truth to that. And I think maybe that's what God has in mind with this whole birthright thing. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Tens of thousands of Jews have stepped in Israel, they were able to sort of plug into that level. But you can't attain that level of Chutz Haaretz because the majority of the Jewish people's history has been outside of it. Man is also a living creature, and therefore also has a similar animal soul. Besides this animal soul, however, man also has a higher soul. This higher soul, godly soul, is a separate entity, completely different from the body and far removed from the physical. Only by virtue of God's decree is the higher soul able to reside in man's physical body, for the purpose outlined in the previous chapter. We are all aware of physical things. We are well aware of physical things, and their natural properties and laws are well known. Spiritual concepts, on the other hand, are outside of the realm of experience, and therefore cannot be adequately described. It's very important to appreciate this fact, that no matter how much we discuss and talk about spiritual entities, we still won't get to their understanding, because it's out of our gauge. You can't out of your gauge. It's just like you can't explain to a baby how a car works. There's no tools that he has to explain to him. So to us, we don't have anything spiritual that we can put our finger on that we can clearly understand. So we could just sort of talk about these spiritual beings, but we definitely can't understand them to their depth. And similarly, when it comes to all kinds of God issues, sometimes I get all kinds of questions about God, and I say, look, I'll tell you the truth, I can't answer them because I don't understand Him. I don't understand God, so I don't know why He does certain things. You know, if I understood Him, then I would be able to answer that, but I don't understand. Okay, I can tell you that He has a track record of proving Himself, but I don't understand it. Okay. When we speak of spiritual entities and phenomena, we must therefore rely completely on the traditions handed down to us. Right? Anything spiritual that we talk about is completely dependent on what is handed down to us, meaning what our sages tell us. Okay, now we're going to get into another important... Let's try reading a little bit in Hebrew, okay? Page 76, okay? Some of the biggest concepts on this topic, a person has to understand that everything you see on this world has its Xerox copy in the heavens. Nothing originates from here. Nothing. Everything that we see, every action, every entity, everything that exists is merely a reflection of what's going on in the heavens, and it has to be connected to it. And we'll understand, we'll speak about soon what the significance of that is. Shemehem mishtalshelim v'yotzim b'seder echad shel hishtalshelut shegazra chokhmato yitbarach shemo. From the heavens, things start out, and then it comes down. You know, you ever see, like in the olden days, how they used to go... scuba diving, they had, like, on the ship, they had a guy with a pipe. Any of you ever been scuba diving? Right. Yeah. Right. You ever go scuba diving? You know what scuba diving is? It's not scuba diving. It's like you have
Not snorkeling.
It's a tube, it's like a hose that's connected to an air.
But you go down.
And you go down very deep. You go down, like, two floors. And you see, like, a hose that's connected to an air tank on a ship, on a boat, that you swim underneath with, and you're connected to the hose. So in a similar vein, right, is what's going on in the spiritual world. We are all connected, everything in this world is connected to a hose in the heavens. And when you slice that hose, that object ceases to exist. So when you see Russia falling, for example, it's not because of the fact that they didn't make a good political move. It's because their hose was snapped. And this is just the manifestation of it. This is just, you're just seeing the, like, results. It's so important to realize that, because that gives us the vision of understanding that when something happens here, the real source to point your fingers and the real place to look of why it happened is upstairs. Okay, so if the world or people are looking at the Jews in a certain way, we don't have to think, well, we're not doing enough PR. It's true. While it might be true, and we have a responsibility of Yishtadlut, which is true, but the essence of the core is not because we're not doing enough PR. It's because the Jewish people in the heavens are not doing the right thing, meaning we're not doing the right thing and being represented properly upstairs, and therefore the manifestation of it is the nations of the world are breathing down neck. Yeah, what was the question? And in the times of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, when the Jewish people were doing what they were supposed to, and the temple was in existence for those years, the world was at peace. David HaMelech had countries that were paying him tribute for, you know, them to be connected to him. There have been times that we were doing the right thing.
What
I'm saying is that it's hard for us to say, well, is it tefillah, tzniut, blessings, kosher, learning, like Shabbat, like which button do we have to press?
Right.
But it's a spiritual button at the end of the day. God doesn't... I want to ask you a question. Does everybody hear what she's bringing up?
Yeah.
She's saying like there's a certain normalcy of the world running, right? Okay. Let me ask you a question. You have an apartment somewhere, right? Okay. Somebody walks into your apartment uninvited or invited and starts rearranging the furniture in a way that you don't like it. What are you going to say?
Please stop.
Why?
Because it's my house and I don't want you to do that.
It's my house, right? Right? Everybody agree with me? Anybody not agree with me? No? Okay. This is God's house. This world is God's house, right? This is His realm. For anyone to think that somebody could do something without Him agreeing with him, or without God knowing about it, and letting it happen, is similar to someone coming to your house and rearranging the furniture. It's Hashem's house. Hashem would never let something happen here without His agreement. That's why we're always battling, why did the Holocaust happen? Well, I have a simple answer. That's the way the world goes. No. Why did it happen? We try and look into it. We don't understand. Why shouldn't this answer be, well, things happen, you know? The answer is no. There's a reason for it. We can't possibly fathom why such evil would befall on the Jewish people, on kids, on righteous people. But we're always looking for a reason. Why? Because we all know that everything that happens in the world, God does a reason. That God says, this is the path I want you to take, and I'm aware of it, and you're taking a different path, and these are the results.
But why has it been that so much of our history that we've chosen a different path?
So the truth is, when you study like prophets and Navi and things like that, you know, it always looks like we're doing something wrong. But, you know, the prophets wouldn't be an interesting book if it was just told us, you know, the history of what we're doing right. So for hundreds, if not thousands of years, we've been doing tremendous things right, and we are the light unto all nations, and we did introduce, you know, monotheism into the world and all these things, but that's not the focus of what the prophets is, to get you to be better. You understand? So there's a lot of Jewish history that's focusing on what we did wrong, and not seemingly not as much focusing on what we did right, because not as much can be learned from that. But the Jewish people have been tremendous in their spiritual connection to God. The temple, all the years of the temple and stuff like that. Even, you know, today, the tshuva movement and all that kind of stuff.
Above what?
Right. Meaning like, for example, either, it depends on what the action is, but either, you know, in heaven, everything works in a court case. There's like a defendant, and a, you know, an attorney. Like everything works in the court case, and God sits there and hears the case out, and He acts upon what is the proper path. So our actions are what determine what tools we have in the heavens. I'll give you an example to this similar topic we're talking about. The destruction of the Second Temple. There was a king named Nebuchadnezzar who destroyed the temple, and you have to understand that like many countries. Many armies tried to break into Jerusalem and destroy the temple, and they weren't able to. And Nebuchadnezzar became all proud of himself. So a heavenly voice came out from the heavens. You know what it said? Kemach tachin tachanta, bayit saruf sarafta. What does that mean? Kemach tachin. What kemach? Tachin. That was grounded already. Tachanta. You grounded ground flour. What does that mean?
You did nothing.
Bayit saruf. Sarafta.
You burnt
the burnt house already. When you burnt the burnt house, you ground the ground flour. What does that mean? God's telling him, the house was burnt already. You just were the one, you were just like the towel I used to wipe it. That's all. Meaning, God was saying, it was burnt in the heavens already. It was decreed to be destroyed. You were just my messenger. So, meaning, like, it's a clear expression of this fact, that whatever happens down here is merely an expression of what's determined upstairs.
Does that reflect what we do?
It absolutely is only reflected by what we do, because as the Ramchal said in different places, the only nation that can make a difference in the world is the Jewish people. Anything that happens in the world is an effect of the Jewish people. Anything. There's nothing that anyone other than Jews can make a difference. That's a great question. I actually asked myself that question. I grew up as a religious kid, and there are certain things that like, I felt that I needed to clear up. One of them was that question. What's the purpose of the secular world? First of all, they too have their own purpose. Like they do have Sheva Mitzvot B'Nenoch. The Noach had laws.
That's
us. No. Noachide laws are seven mitzvot that God gave over to the non-Jews. They have seven mitzvot. We have 613.
As in, actually, everyone that's not Jewish.
Anyone that's not Jewish has those seven mitzvot, and then he gets into heaven. Not the same heaven that we get into, but a certain level of it. Could you take off that term, Mr. Mulok? Sorry. So it's not the same heaven that we get into, but they do have their own purpose. That's the first question. The question, in addition, we have to understand that the Gentile world is, in essence, in existence so that we can exist. Meaning, they do many things so that we don't have to. I'll give you an example. You have a chair that you're sitting on right now, right? How many people do you need in order to have that chair? How many people are in existence so that you can sit on that chair? Right, she's thinking correctly. And you know what? Even if you go out without throughout history, that's true one way, that's one thing. But even right now, how many people have to be in existence? Let's work together for a moment so that that chair can get the Shaarim. First of all, you need a guy to get the metal, right? Okay, this guy that gets the metal, he's not going to be sitting like a robot all day making metal. God has to give him a family so there's free will. So he needs kids and a wife and a structure and schools for his kids and buses and cars and all these, this whole thousands of people so that he can function. After that, you've created the metal. You need the cushion part of it. And after you've created the chair, it has to get to Israel, right? Now, it's not going to fly here. Okay, it's got to get here on a ship. That ship has to be created as well with people, with families. You're talking about tens of thousands of people so that you could have that one chair that you can get to.
But that's suggesting they have no spiritual purpose.
So I said, that's why I said there's two reasons for it. One is they have their own purpose, which is their Noahide laws that they can reach a certain connection to God as well. And the second thing is to serve us. Two reasons.
So that's medicine.
What do you mean? They are now. You're sitting on a chair, aren't you? Shmuley didn't make it in Brooklyn. Came from China or something.
I don't think it's a very good
person. Doesn't matter. The question is why God put them here.
One second.
Here he's saying it's there. Why did God create them here? Okay?
Shmuley could have been the chair.
Right. It's true. That's a different question, why did Shmuley? The bottom line is this is their, that is what they're doing. Your car that you're driving is most probably not made in Borough Park.
That would
be really funny. Yeah. We have like mezuzahs and stuff. And a standard.
That'd be hilarious.
It was like a prayer alert, you know? But it all, you know, yeah, it would come with a small car would be 8-seater. Convertible 8-seater. Flip back, you know.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? You need an entire structure of Europe, of America, whatever it is, to serve us. Who's going into right now Iraq and battling so that Israel could have
America?
Whatever. Whether it's good or not good, peace or not peace, but I'm saying you're seeing
so much of the non-Jewish world that has actually worked against us throughout history.
That would
talk about
there's a need. There's a need for that as well. There's a need for that as well. Do you not see? Let me ask you a question. She's like, Bernie, ask the question. Do you not see an abnormal level of the world paying attention to the Jewish people? An abnormal, like we're so small and we're on everyone's. You know that they did.
We're just talking about that.
But even more than that. No. Even more than that. We are on everybody's news list. Like, for example, they did a poll once. They asked people how big they think Israel is. And they think probably like as big as like the West Coast of America, Australia, as big as China. Yeah, people said like as big as Russia. And they say it's, they told them it's smaller than the smallest state in America, New Jersey.
Much smaller.
Why? And yet the whole world is always looking at us. Why? Don't you see an abnormal, how everybody's looking at every move we make? Why is that? Because again, we are the focal point of creation, and the rest of the world is here either to get their own closeness to God or to serve us. Now, the question that you have to ask is, and we've spoken about this before, why is this not racism? We're saying we're the best and they're not. You heard this before, right? Okay, she's going to tell us the answer. What?
Everybody has the option to join. It's not a closed club.
You could be Jewish, Everybody could be Jewish, right? Could be Jewish. Everybody could be Jewish. Not like what's it called, the Nazis, who said only you could be Aryan and you can't. You could be Jewish and be the chosen one from the chosen group. Cover your hair, dress tzanua, don't eat bread for 8 days on Pesach. Cut your kid when he's 8 days old. All kinds of stuff like that. You could do it too, though. Okay, so that's what that is. Yeah. What was your question?
Why did I have that relationship with
God? They are his children as well. The non-Jewish world are his children. They are fashioned by his own hands. They're not on the same spiritual level as we are, but they are part of his palace. No, they're not. No, right? As I said, they're not on the same level. We're like the princes. We are the king's child, and they are part of the king's palace. Not slaves. I didn't say slaves, but like they're his cabinet members or something like that. So they do have souls. Okay. There is a significance to them. In fact, when the Egyptians were drowning, what did the angels started singing? What did God say? Yes, we heard this one before. But don't right, Maaseh Yadayi Tovim Bayam. You can't sing. My things that I finished are drowning. You don't sing, even though we were being saved and coming out of the because they are his creations. He cares about them just like he cares. He cares about every creation that he made. He cares about animals, he cares about people, he cares about non-Jews, Jews, everybody is created. However, their spiritual soul is not on the same levels as ours. And that's not negative. It's not negative because we do a lot to deserve that. I've never eaten a cheeseburger in my life. You know that? I would love to eat a cheeseburger.
You're not
missing. Whatever. Just say. Okay? I would love to, bacon eggs once in a while. To taste it. Why not? The answer is there's a lot of things that I do. My wife walks around with a turban in the middle of the heat when we're in Florida. She does a lot. She covers herself like she's dressed in Alaska when she's really gone on vacation in California. I do a lot of things. We live in certain things certain things that the Jewish people do to deserve that soul, so to speak. If you want it, you can get it. Just gotta step up to that. But that's the luck. That's Avraham Avinu's fault. It's because he stepped in. When God was looking around, who was going to be my nation, Avraham Avinu said, I will. So it's a born right that we have. But it's not excluding others. Converts have been some of our biggest leaders. Okay, so again, it's a higher level, and we shouldn't be embarrassed to say, yes, we are great and better. Because at the same time, you can be. You don't want to keep kosher on Shabbat and Brit Milah and Pesach and Sniut and all that stuff. Okay, don't tell me, don't complain to me that you don't have the same soul as I do. Mm-hmm. That's not my fault. All right.
Wait, so when you say
it means their soul is not on the same level as us.
It's not equal soul.
It's not equal soul. It's a different place from God. It comes from a different place. It goes back to a different place. I know for some of you this is shocking, and like this sounds like if I would say it's on a college campus, it would be like so close minded, but I don't think it's close minded at all. I think we do a lot to deserve it, and I think and the fact that Judaism says anybody can become a Jew is a beautiful thing, and it just shows that we're open to it. There's nothing wrong with having higher and lower levels. Yeah. Spiritual, I don't know exactly what it was. But my point is that there is, from the Gentile world, there are plenty of people who are good people. And the only problem is that we have a responsibility to teach them as Jews. You know what the problem is? We're so busy with our own kind that we can't focus on them. But our job is to be a light onto the nations. I shouldn't have to teach a Jew about the Torah and that it's true. I should be able to make seminars for Gentile world and tell them about God and that they have seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. But instead I'm focusing on the Jew who doesn't believe that he should keep Shabbat.
Wow.
So meaning that it's true, like we have a responsibility to them as well. And that's our focus. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Rambam says one of the reasons God allowed the other nations of the world to have religions, if I'm not mistaken, I heard this a long time ago, so like don't quote me if it's the Rambam, but it was because the Jewish people weren't doing their job. Who introduced, practically speaking, we introduced monotheism, but who taught the world about God? What? Christianity, the Arabs, more than we did. they made more people believe in God than we did, unfortunately. Because we weren't doing our job. So God said, okay, you're not doing my job, I'm going to give it to someone who is. But it's our job. We're supposed to be a light unto the nations. Okay? Okay, let's go on. Alright? Alright. So it's important to know that everything that exists in this world is merely a reflection of something that happens in the heavens. For example, the Zohar says that if your wife is upset, and I shouldn't tell some ways, but if your wife is upset at you, it's a reflection of the heavens. That God is sending you a message. And I found that true in my life.
So can I tell my husband?
No. Because then you'll be like, I'm feeling upset at you. I need chocolate. Yeah, take out the garbage. No, but there is such a thing, like, you know, the spiritual, the physical being over here is a reflection of what's going on in heaven. For example, we've mentioned this numerous times, the children's blessing is directly linked to the modesty of the wife, not the husband. The modesty of the wife, the head covering of the wife, the tzniut of the wife, the Zohar says, is what causes blessing to the children, the chas v'shalom, the opposite, if not. So that it's a complete, it has nothing, that part of the blessing has nothing to do with the husband. Talk about like anti-male statement over here. The husband is this big Rosh Hashiva and whatnot, and the fact that his wife dresses modestly brings more blessing to the kids than the husband does.
A lot of pressure.
It is logic. That's the reality of the situation. I don't write the book, I just teach it.
The more tzanua she is, maybe more,
the more tzanua she is, the more blessing her husband and her children have. Okay.
I mean, in every way.
Look, I can't like zip it into what exactly. I could just tell you what the Zohar says. I can't like tell you like, you know, this is exactly what it's referring to. But that's what the Zohar says. The Zohar says that tzniut shel ha'isha. That's for example, Kimchit. She had seven boys that were kohanim gedolim, right? You familiar with this? Why was that? Because the way she never, like, oh, that's fair. That's fair. Where is her husband was like a football player, and like he had nothing to do with it, I'm sure. Doesn't say anything about her husband. Nothing. Took them to school, to shul, learn with them, nothing. They became kohen gadolim because she covered her hair properly. Oh, that makes sense. Thank you very much for hearing that. But that's the reality. That's the mitzvah. Okay. So again, what I'm telling you now is the Ramchal is a basic blueprint. When you study the Ramchal and you understand how things happen and why things happen, it gives you a different focus on things. It gives you an appreciation of where to press the buttons. Hand in hand with Hishtadlut. You obviously have to do things to raise your children properly, but you should also know where the real secret lies. Okay, guys, we'll stop here.